to the Plus Size Traveler Podcast, formerly named the Plus Size Globetrotter Podcast. This is Adrienne.
And I'm Lauren.
And this is the first and only dedicated podcast for plus size travelers.
We also already have 3 episodes available on iTunes covering London, Oahu, Hawaii, and the Naples region of Italy.
And you might be wondering why we did the name change. We wanted to make it easier for everyone to find us on iTunes. And we want to apologize for the delay in this episode. It's been, 4 months, but we've been really busy with work, and Lauren bought a new condo, and I actually just got back from Europe a few weeks ago, so it's just been a hectic summer. So I want to reintroduce myself. My name is Adrienne. I'm in Los Angeles, and when I'm not traveling, and my current job is a director of marketing at one of the studios here in Los Angeles, and just for reference, I'm a size 20 in Torrid.
And to reintroduce myself, my name is Lauren. Adrienne and I met in Los Angeles, but I made the move a few years ago to the island of Maui in Hawaii, and I'm a concierge on island selling activities and helping people plan their vacations, which is my dream job. And I'm a Torrid size 26 and 28, depending on what I'm purchasing, or which would be a 4X or a 5X. And this is our new episode. This is going to be episode number 4, covering Montreal and Vermont. And my remembrance of Montreal before we headed down there was I kept hearing that Montreal and Quebec were the North American Paris. And who does not love Paris? So I had always wanted to go. And when Adrienne and I were setting up a trip to New York City, I was thinking, well, we got a side trip. Where should we go? And as soon as we came up with Montreal, we were both extremely excited.
Yeah, it was very cool. We drove up there from New York. It was incredibly beautiful. And for our very first time, we have a special guest. We met up with Edith Bernier.
Also pronounced Bernier.
But Edith has the longest running plus size travel blog called The Plus Size Backpacker since 2013. She is also the author of The Ultimate Guide to Plus Size Backpacking and a professional speaker. So here is our interview with Edith, where she talks about the best things to do in Montreal, plus size backpacking, and more.
We're talking to Edith Bernier this afternoon. We're very excited. She is the author of The Ultimate Guide to Plus Size Backpacking, as well as the blog author, I guess I would say.
Founder, creator. Yeah,
everything for the Plus Size Backpacker website. So welcome, Edith.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here with you guys.
Yay. And this is...
This is Adrienne.
So this morning, we just want to talk a lot about your experiences with the beginning of the Plus Size Backpacker and basically what led you to start the blog. So can you give us a little bit of history on that?
Yes, of course. Back in 2012, I went to India. And as I was preparing for that trip, I had to do a lot of shopping to find a backpack and proper clothing and so on. And as I was doing that shopping, I realized that most of the backpack, that was the biggest challenge, the backpack actually, the straps didn't fit my body. So like the chest strap, the hip belt, it was really hard to find a backpack fitting my body. And all the clothes, I mean, most of them didn't really, weren't made in a, you know, travel perspective. So it's relatively easy to find regular size clothes, plus size clothes, I'm sorry. But to find some that are travel friendly, they're practical for travel, that was another challenge. So that's what inspired me to start the blog. And after I came back from India early 2013, I started the Plus Size Backpacker, and it's been 5 years of adventure since.
So is there special clothing you need to do backpacking style travel? Because I'm not one of those people. I'm more like, not luxury, but comfort.
Well, comfort is really important. Okay. You have something here. But, I mean, you have to have compact, quick-to-dry comfortable.
Quick to dry.
So everybody that says, oh, use natural fibers like linen and cotton, I say wrong. Because those take forever to dry. They're always wrinkled. I mean, I'm not the kind of person that will iron my clothes. I mean, I'm going to wear the same yoga pants if I have to. So I go usually actually athletic wear, sportswear is probably the closest thing you can find. But sometimes you have that little event where you need a cuter dress or a nicer outfit. So it's really important to find a proper balance to be able to go pretty much everywhere. So sometimes that cute top that you can wear with leggings to go hiking is also that cute top that you're going to wear for a night on the town. So you have to see, you know, the versatility of every piece, and everything has to, you know, pack small, be, you know, able to be mix and match. Everything has to mix and match together. So that's pretty much, and yeah, comfort, like you said. So polyester, supplex, spandex, they're your friends when you're a backpacker. I mean, I remember in Bulgaria, sometimes I didn't take a cab, I don't know, or a car or anything for like 5 days in the same city. I was just walking around everywhere. And I took a cab from the bus station to get to my hostel and from the hostel to go back to the, you know, whatever, the train or the bus or the airplane.
That makes sense.
Otherwise, walking all the time.
Okay.
I walked 19 kilometers in one day once in Bulgaria.
Oh my gosh.
So nice.
That's probably like over 10 miles.
Okay. That's a bit.
Yeah, that's
for me especially. Well, obviously the reaction to your blog has been positive enough to keep going. Has there ever been a point where you're kind of just, I'm going to move on? Or is there still enough good reaction, enough positive feedback that you're just probably going to be at it forever?
I hope I'm going to be at it forever. Honestly, things are getting better. Obviously, I'm not alone anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's the good news, because when I started back in 2013, I did take the time to look on Google.
Yeah.
And other than a few plus size bloggers that mm-hmm. were mostly into fashion back
yeah.
then, who wrote, oh, it's, you know, it's not cool to take a plane when you're a big girl, something like that. But there was nothing specialized. There was nothing solely dedicated to plus size travel.
Mm-hmm.
So the need was obviously there. I think the need is still there, because I feel here anyway, in French Canada, I have to say, here in Quebec, I feel an urge, I feel a desire from women to stop, you know, just taking the scraps and whatever, you know, whatever's left from the industry and say, listen, I want you to address my needs. I don't want you to talk to the thin girl next to me, and I'm going to do whatever I can with whatever you offer her and what's left. I want you to address your products, and I want you to address your services to me. I want to be part of this conversation, and I want my needs to be addressed.
Yeah,
I think we're working on it. I mean, there are some interesting things going on right now with the clothing industry.
Mm-hmm.
I think potentially with the travel industry that needs, you know, we need to keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, I think I could be at it forever, probably. I feel right now, after 5 years, I think I'm hitting my prime right now.
Nice.
So the people start to know about it. It's becoming a known resource. And that's when it gets the most interesting, I think.
Okay. I feel like half the time we're like begging companies to take our money. And it's just, I mean, if you had designed your perfect backpack, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
why did it take someone else so long? But anyways, Adrienne, do you have any questions? Do you want to
No, I don't have a question, but I want to interject. I mean, this is the whole reason why we started the podcast, because I'm an avid podcast listener, and I listen to all the podcasts when I'm going to a city, like I'm pulling up Montreal or pulling up, you know, Osaka. And I realized there wasn't a plus size travel podcast. And I'm thinking to myself, why not? I'm a big girl and I love to travel, and I have a lot of time in my car and I have to listen to podcasts. So it was screaming to me that we needed to have it. So Lauren started the blog. I said, let's do a podcast. And she agreed with me. So we're all here in Montreal and I'm excited to be here.
The plus size blogging community in the French speaking part of Canada is still quite limited. I have to say we're about three. We're at it like really seriously in French. I'm the only, well, no, we're actually two are bilingual. So there's Amy Needs a Raincoat. And there's a French blogger that's called 10 October, so October 10th. And she's more an activist. I have my moment
mm-hmm.
of activism for the past year or so after there was a big newspaper article that came out and that was really, you know, into fat phobia and fat shaming. And I was like, no way, there's no way I'm not reacting to this. And Emily, who does Emily's Raincoat, she's more into fashion, and she's got these amazing pictures, and she's our Montreal plus-size fashionista, I would say. But the scene is still quite limited here, though.
I'm not one to pack light, personally. I have never done a trip that's all backpack-focused, or not really about planes, trains, and automobiles. So describe how you decided what to leave home and what that's like.
Well, you know all the things that you say, but what if this? And I actually wrote a blog post about the what-if syndrome. All the what-ifs, if you put them all together, they take a lot of room.
Okay.
So all that is like, whatever. I'm not going into a place where there are no drugstore, no grocery shopping places. I mean, like, I'm going into civilized places, you know? Even if you're going into developing or poorer countries, there's always a way to get by. You just need to be a little bit more creative. So all the what-ifs, sometimes they can take up to a third of your luggage. Okay. Do the exercise when you come home. Okay. You'll be surprised. So all the what-ifs aside, it also depends on the weather where you're going. I mean, I've been to Peru with a carry-on, a 48-liter carry-on backpack, and I dealt with pretty much all weather between 0 and 30 degrees Celsius. So basically freezing point to
very
hot summer, deserty weather. And I have to be ready for everything, but I managed. So, and you also have to think, like, capsule. Whatever you need for 4 or 5 days is enough, even though you leave it for 3 weeks. In hostels, where I usually crash, there's always a place where you can do your laundry. That's where it's important to have quick dry laundry clothing, because, you know, if you wash everything, you want everything to be dried overnight. If it hasn't dried overnight, you're in trouble, because if you move along the next day, you're packing wet clothes, and that's not good.
No.
So yeah, the what-ifs. If you leave for a long time, leave your jeans at home. Jeans are not your friend.
That's exactly what I was thinking when you were like, if it's not quick dry, and I was like, but my jeans.
I know. I that's probably the item of clothing I miss the most when I go for a long time. If you leave for a week or less, jeans are your friend, because you can wear them a few times. It matches with everything. It's becoming, you know, very casual wear. But otherwise, jeans out the window, leggings in. Leggings and tunics and dresses are actually pretty easy to work with.
Okay, so you had just mentioned Peru. Machu Picchu was a big dream realized. What is next on your bucket list?
I'm going to San Francisco in 3 weeks with some friends over there. And then I spent just 5 days there. And then I head up to Alaska in Alyeska, near the Alyeska Resort in Girdwood. So in the suburbs of Anchorage, for a wedding. Actually, it's a backpacker wedding.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, a couple I met in Guatemala in 2013. And they invited me to their wedding.
So is there, like, a backpacker community that's really close-knit?
No, not precisely. I just stumbled into them in a hostel in Guatemala after a night on the road, and I was completely, like, wiped out. I had breakfast, and they were sitting there, and we started chatting, and then we spent some time together, and then we bumped into each other a few times on the way. And then they came to Montreal and in 2016, just to say hello. And yeah, and they said they were getting married this summer, and so yeah, Alaska is on the way.
All right.
I love that. I guess one of my big questions that I would assume other people have asked you multiple times is, do you train for your trips, or are you just you're in a natural walking city? What do you do before a big backpack trip?
It depends what I do. Before I went to Guatemala, I knew I had a couple of intense hikes, so I did train before, and I continued training after, and I realized it really allowed me to do more. I felt like I could hike all day long around the city, that I could go to places that sometimes the buses or taxis or, you know, it's hard to get to those places. So sometimes just, you know, your 2 feet and you're on your own. And it also allows you to go to places where you can be alone. Sometimes, you know, when you go away from everything, and it's really nice, the whole hostel thing and everything, but sometimes you just want to be alone on your own and absorb and enjoy. And so yeah, sometimes I do train. Right now for San Francisco, I haven't particularly trained. I'm just, you know, trying to walk around as much as I can, stay, stay healthy, keep a good cardio. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it really depends on the adventures that I have on the way.
It's a very hilly city. So.
I have heard.
How often do you travel a year? Do you take, like, you know, one or two big trips a year? Or is it kind of like whenever you can get out?
A bit of both, actually. It's one or two whenever I can get out.
Okay.
So, yeah, because I have about 4 weeks of vacation every year.
Okay.
So, you just have to manage the budget. And this year I knew I had the wedding in Alaska. So I kind of worked around this because usually I take my vacation either in the spring, so April, May, or in September, October. So this year it's my first time traveling in like the peak season, which is late June, early July. But, you know, I usually see with, okay, if I have friends going somewhere that I met on a past trip that I can meet somewhere on the way, if I can, I try to manage that, you know. But otherwise, I'm usually just, 2 weeks in September or April, and I just pack up and go.
Mm, gotcha.
What's the first thing you pack?
My little ladybug. I have this little stuffed ladybug that I got from my nephew when I turned 18. Considering I'm 37 now, it means that she's... close to 19. So that's the first thing, because I remember when I went to Peru and I realized during my layover in Toronto that I forgot my ladybug. I was crying in the airport like a baby. Oh. And so my husband took a picture and we made a flat cardboard, ladybug, and that followed me around everywhere. So yeah, it's the first thing I pack. And otherwise, I would probably say my pajamas, because I always forget them. It happened to me a couple of times to realize, oops, snap, I forgot a proper pajama. So
I once forgot underwear, so I had to wash and dry the same pair every day for about 2 weeks. That was not fun.
Oh, were you in a place where they didn't have plus-size underwear?
I was doing a cruise, and there was even a Kmart, and it was in some city in Mexico, I don't know. And even the Kmart... nothing for me. So it was, yeah, that's one of the...
That's so hard to find proper, good, comfortable underwear.
Very, very, very true. What's the most unexpected place you've been? The place you've gotten there and you were like, I wasn't expecting it to be this amazing.
I did cry when I got to Chichen Itza in Mexico. I knew it would be amazing. I've always been fascinated with the Mayan and the pre-Columbian cultures in Latin America. But I think, before that, I went to Tazumal in Salvador, which is also another site of Mayan ruins. And I went to another place Hoya de Seren, also in Salvador. But Chichen Itza, I don't know. It was something like a dream come true, I have to say. Peru and Machu Picchu also had a similar effect with the Inca culture. But I remember arriving, in front of the main pyramid in Chichen Itza and crying my heart out behind my sunglasses. And I was like, oh my God, that was so beautiful. And I was like, you could see the tears running behind my shades. And yeah, I think I was really struck by this place. And I think, yeah, Machu Picchu had a similar effect, but I think I was more like, and I remember listening to the soundtrack to the opening credits of my favorite cartoon when I was a kid, because my interest for pre-Columbian culture actually comes from a cartoon that I listened to when I was a kid, where they actually visited places in Latin America. And I remember listening to the credit of that cartoon on the site of Machu Picchu in my headset and just dancing around.
Aww.
Like, yeah, probably looked completely crazy.
That's all right. We're all a bit crazy. I absolutely loved your post on body positivity. I've never heard it called BOPO. So do you ever think it'll stop being about the Ashley Grahams of this world? Do you think we can move on?
I hope. I mean, it's funny. I was actually at a gala where they gave awards to organizations that were encouraging body positivity, like body diversity, this week. And we're basically all aiming that this becomes a non-subject.
Yes.
At least to give the right to indifference. I mean, I don't want to be, to use a language that's used sometimes in the LGBTQ community. I don't want to be clocked because I'm a big girl. I don't want to have a double take, because I'm a big girl. And, I mean, we are right now, they say, oh, but we're body positive. We have, like you said, Ashley Graham. We have all these super gorgeous hourglass shape, proportionate, perfect women with gorgeous faces, with barely no cellulite and all, the curves in the right place. I mean, my body type doesn't exist anywhere right now. So it's right now, it's been the body positive word has been appropriated by many organizations that are just basically promoting something that is really close to what's already conventionally beautiful.
Yeah, a size 14 maybe instead of...
Or a size 16, yeah. That's it, you know, but with perfect shape and with a perfect face and, you know, with you know, like a nice bust and proper butt, but, you know, like a tiny waist and so on. So I hope this becomes a non-subject one day. I hope that we can say, like other communities who lived with discrimination, back in the days, you know, it was hard to be fat, but not anymore. Mm-hmm. So back in the days, there were no clothes for us. Back in the days, people told us awful things on the street, you know, but not anymore, you know.
Since you are a plus-size backpacker expert, what equipment would you recommend in terms of backpack to fit a plus-size person if they're going to do this for the first time?
I have personally opted for, as much as I can, for carry-on backpack.
Carry-on.
Carry-on friendly in terms of size. Because when you're a plus-size woman, if you go to some countries, for example, in Southeast Asia, it is impossible to find plus-size clothing. Even what they call plus-size is not even close to our definition of plus-size. So you don't want to take the risk of having your luggage checked in the plane, and you know your luggage comes in late, they lose it. So that's why you want to travel with your carry-on as much as you can, and it's possible actually. I have a 48 liter right now, called the Gear Hauler by Eagle Creek. That's the one that I've been using for Poland, for Peru, for Bulgaria, and it hasn't let me down this far.
What about the straps? Is there any issue with, like, a plus-size girl?
The shoulder straps, I mean, sometimes it's important to find shoulder straps that are not only adjustable in vertically, but also horizontally. Sometimes they can be adjusted from, like, high and low, but also in terms of width, because sometimes we have broader shoulders.
Right.
The hip belt is something that should never be neglected, because you need the hip belt to carry the weight. That's really, really important. Usually, if you travel with just a carry-on, your bag is not that heavy. But if you want to use, let's say, like a 60, 75 liter, because you know, you're not that far yet into minimalistic luggage, and I've done that mistake. I mean, I can understand, you know, if it happens to someone else, but you don't want to neglect the hip belt, because that's where the weight is. Also, the chest strap, the one that, you know, like, that you don't know if you wear it above your breast or under your breast, that it always looks funny. It will always look funny and weird.
Okay.
Don't worry about it. But it has to fit, because you put some weight on your sternum and it just spread across your body. So it makes it easier to carry your bag.
So what was this brand again that has been your go-to?
Right now, I own an Eagle Creek Gear Hauler.
And where did you order that on, like, eBags?
No, I actually found it in my favorite store here in Montreal, my favorite travel store. That's called Jet Setter.
Yes. Awesome. Now, since we just mentioned Montreal, I'm going to segue into Montreal. So you've been here for about, you said, about 18 years.
Yep.
So you're our resident Montreal expert.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had just 2 full days in Montreal, and that's technically what we have, what are the top things that we really need to see here?
You could do, like, at least half a day to a day strolling from Old Port, Chinatown, and into the village. The Old Port, because it's close to the water, and, you know, it's the historic, you know, neighborhood. Chinatown is just really vibrant. It's really small. It's actually more of a Vietnam town than an actual Chinatown. But you can get cheap eats and, you know, good cheap foods and little, you know, you have to taste Chinatown in every city where there is one.
Yeah.
It's always a vibrant, interesting neighborhood. And then you can just walk all the way through to the village, because St. Catherine Street in the village, which is the gay neighborhood of Montreal, the St. Catherine Street is closed, so it's pedestrian only. You got, you know, terraces to have drinks and coffees and eat everywhere, and you got these, you know, rainbow balls hanging all over the streets, so it's really, really nice. I would say there's a few good places to eat also in Chinatown and in the village, also in the Old Port, so I can probably get into that. If you're on rush, you grab a banh mi at on the corner of René Lévesque on Saint-Laurent, just below René Lévesque. There's a place of banh mi, these tiny Vietnamese sandwiches that are absolutely amazing. In the village, you can have, there are lots of places with nice coffee. There's this bar called Le Renard, which is the French for the fox. It's a really cute terrace, sunlight, good drinks, cold beer. They have their own beer, so it's really, really nice. If you want to drive or use the public transportation, you can probably go up Mont-Royal. There are two Belvederes where you can see the city, one that faces the east, where you can see more residential, the Olympic Stadium and everything towards the South Shore. And then there's another one a little higher up that's called the and I forgot the name, but anyway, that's the one where just a big building where you can actually have a, it's a reception hall. And there's, you can see the whole of downtown and, you know, our big downtown and the skyscrapers and our quotes on this big downtown. So
now, so we actually are staying in an apartment that, this is old Montreal.
This is the, yeah, the old port, the old
the
Montreal.
The old port. And so we're like, you know, really, really close to Notre Dame Cathedral.
Mm, yes.
So that's like one of the top things to see here. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. It's where, you know, if I'm correct, this is where Celine Dion got married.
I didn't know that. Oh my gosh.
I think I'm not even sure. So I mean, and that's a very nice building. There is this light show every night. That I haven't seen it yet, but I've seen videos of it and it looks really, really cool. Every neighborhood in Montreal has a story. I mean, you go to Little Italy, you've got this food hall that we discussed earlier.
Oh, tell us about the food hall.
The Chantelon Market.
Yes, tell me about that.
This is where people go to get their tomato plants to garden in the summer. This is where you can get lots of fresh food, fresh vegetables, local markets from around the city. They come here, local producers, they come here to the market. And it's very, you know, very cute, very bohème if you want. So it's a cute little place. And you can find a few places to buy some you know, cold cuts and meats around it. And that's like a neighborhood that is used to be Italian. So you can find some decent places to buy, you know, Italian specialties and what they call the Italian hardware shop, which is basically, they call it hardware, quincaillerie in French. But it's where you get all the stuff, the specialized tools to cook Italian food and make pastas and so on. So
now we just got here last night, so we really haven't had a chance to like explore, but I noticed there's a lot of bicyclists out. So do you Montrealians, I'm not even sure what you
Montrealers.
Call Montrealers. Do you guys bike everywhere?
Lots of people do, actually. I have many friends who, you know, bike their way pretty much across anything. Personally, I'm not a big biker. I'm more of a walker, hiker. Montreal is not that much of a hike, but other than Mont-Royal, where you can see those Belvederes to see the city, but you don't have that much, you know, room to hike in Montreal. But yeah, we have some rental bikes that you can use that are called Bixi, so you can go and see bike racks everywhere in the streets, and people can just swipe in the card and just go away, and they have a like a monthly or like a season pass for the Bixi, and they can just, you know, just find another Bixi rack and put it back afterwards. So I think this has been very popular. There are lots of bike paths in Montreal, so I think it's becoming a more, you know, bike friendly city.
So we just had some Montreal style bagels from Fairmont Bagels. And I believe that there's another bagel shop that's really well known. What's the name
Saint
of that
Vieta
one?
Saint Bagel. Yeah, okay. Which is really close to Fairmount. So it's all in the Mile End neighborhood. So this is the bagel neighborhood, Mile End. You want to go to Schwartz? You want to have the smoked meat?
Oh, the smoked meat, yes.
The smoked meat from
Schwartz. I've seen the lines. Like, what's a good time to go?
Well, I mean, for lunch and regular meals, mealtime, you'll always have a line. So go between mealtimes. Mm-hmm. That's probably your best bet because they don't take reservations. You just line up and wait.
And then the most iconic, I think, when I think of Montreal or Quebec, is the poutine.
The so-called poutine.
So if I could go to one poutinerie, which one should I go to and what should I order?
You go to the Banquise. It's 24/7. So they're open. I think they're even open on Christmas. The Banquise is on Rachel Street, if I'm correct. And you just order the traditional, like the original recipe.
Because, and that's the fries and the cheese curds and the gravy.
Yeah. Exactly, because you want to know what's the real thing before you explore, because they have like a gazillion different sauces and cheeses and toppings and everything, but you want to have the real thing. And if you want to twist on the traditional poutine, you can go to the Pied de Cochon, which has the foie gras poutine.
Oh, that's the something pig, right?
Yeah, the Pied de Cochon, it's basically a French word for pig's feet.
Pig's feet.
Yeah.
So it looks like we covered much of Montreal and the top eats, top things to do. So if you had one travel tip for people coming to Montreal for the first time, what would it be?
Don't be afraid to use public transportation, because I've seen, you know, I've been looking into San Francisco for a while, and I see how pricey the public transportation is there. Here in Montreal, it's honestly, it's really cheap. For $20-something, you can have an unlimited weekend pass and use the bus and the metro, the underground, as much as you want. And it's going to take you anywhere. I mean, most of the city is covered, if not by the metro, by the buses. It would be sad to miss whatever is not as centrally located, just because, you know, you don't have a car, you don't want to take a cab, because a cab can be expensive. So, yeah, public transportation is really a good way. And otherwise, walk around. It's not that hard to walk around Montreal. And it's a very nice city that, you know, you just walk around and you absorb it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's our first special guest ever on this podcast. Lauren, do you have any other questions for Edith?
What would you want to say to the, not just the plus-size backpackers, but the plus-size globetrotters of the world?
Don't be afraid. I mean, claim your space figuratively and literally. I know right now the industry is kind of not really thinking about us, but if we don't, you know, if we don't ask for it, we'll never get it. And don't wait until ... Do it now, because time flies. We're not getting any younger, and you want to do these things, you know, as young as you can, because there's so many places to see. And I remember telling my mom once, "Oh, you know, when I'm 35, I'm going to go to, you know, easy, chill countries." And she said, "Well, you're 37 now, and you're not, you know, you don't even seem close to calm down on these matters." So go explore, because life is short. Exploring is not a matter, shouldn't be a matter of size.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for making your way to us, or meeting us in the middle.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited about this.
Again, we just got here in Montreal. We're going to go out and explore the city in the next 48 hours, and then we'll come back to you and let you know what we thought. So until then, we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
So why don't you cover what we saw in Montreal?
Okay. So as we were driving into Montreal, I will first say Montreal is a city in transition. They are always, I would imagine, redoing roads. So using traditional GPS was a bit of a I'll just say it, clusterfuck. It's my podcast. No, it's our podcast. I can say it was a bit of a clusterfuck using GPS. We got lost like 3 times coming over the bridge. It probably would have been best to pre-know all of the roads and freeways that were under construction, but that's okay. They're improving their city constantly, so we're cool with that. But once we got into the city, it definitely did have that old world charm. We were really lucky, and we stayed in the heart of the downtown area, a short walk from the Notre Dame and the port, and tons of restaurants, shopping, basically their main, like, touristic downtown, which is, of course, fabulous.
Actually, so we went to Notre Dame, and we actually didn't go inside because the days that we were there, they weren't doing that special, I think it's called Aria, the special light show inside. We were missing it. So we actually didn't go inside Notre Dame. But if you are there, there is a really incredible light show that I hear is magical. You can see some of the previews on YouTube. And so definitely check out the days. It's not every day.
Yeah, that was one of the big disappointments, was getting up there and realizing, you know, it's like the 2 days we weren't going to be there of the week then. So that was a big disappointment. But yeah. We definitely made it to the top of Mont Royal, which, again, GPS was a little bit of a mess, but we got all the way up to the top, and the views are pretty amazing. There's actually 2 lookout points way up at the top, tippity top, and then that's more of like a mountainous view, and then the main lookout point is the city of Montreal, where you can see everything from above. So it is a gorgeous little Paris, minus maybe a Eiffel Tower, but heading up Mont Royal was definitely beautiful and worth it, because now we get to talk about, with no shame and all loss of dignity, that really the main reason we went to Montreal was for the food. And I'm going to let Adrienne take that away, because she is like the foodie of all foodies.
This is true. I travel for history, architecture, and food. So our very first morning there, before we met up with Edith, we went to Fairmount Bagel. And Montreal-style bagels are a little different than New York. Lauren, did you think they're like a little cakier and drier, not as chewy? What were your thoughts?
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think the biggest difference for me was like the cream cheese aspect of it. And I was really happy to hear that Edith's like, no, we get Philly cream cheese because they do have their own style of cream cheese up there. And for me, that was a little too tart. But the bagel itself, I would agree, was just a little bit cakier than like a New York bagel we had just gotten back from New York City. So we'd been shoving our faces with some of the best bagels in the world. So for me, if it were, you know, a toss up, New York for the win.
Okay, gotcha. And then we went to Jean Talon. I'm sure I'm saying this wrong. I'm going to say Jean Talon Market. That's totally not how you say it. But it's a really, really old indoor and outdoor food hall. Mm-hmm. So they sell a lot of produce as well as prepared foods. So lots of maple things for tourists. And did you grab anything to eat while we were looking around there, Lauren?
I'm racking my brain and I can't remember having purchased something. Like I looked at a lot of pastry. You hear the thing was we had already gone grocery shopping and we knew what we were doing food wise. So I don't think I did anything but feast my eyes.
Gotcha. I sampled things. There was a cheese shop, and then there was a lovely bakery where I got crusty bread for our dinner, I think. But oh, yeah. It's a lovely market. You know, I think I sampled four different maple syrups. I couldn't tell the difference, but I'm sure there's a difference. And then I think for lunch that day or the next day, we went to the famous Schwartz's Deli, and it's in a really eclectic neighborhood. And, you know, Montrealians, I don't know.
Montrealers, they love to bike. I think Edith told us they were Montrealers.
Montrealers. Wasn't there bikes everywhere? They were biking everywhere. Things were blocked off. I think there was some kind of a race the day that we were there.
Yeah, it was another, like, roadblock, basically. Yeah. They were having a major bicycle race. And so getting into the super cool downtown areas where Schwartz's was kind of impossible. We gave it the old college try for sure. But I will say, yeah, we were in traffic forever. But we eventually made it to Schwartz's.
We did. We had to walk a while, and I feel like, it was probably like four blocks. I don't know. It was pretty far. But so smoked meat is super popular up there. In this particular deli is probably the number one place to get it. There's usually a line to get in, but we actually didn't have to wait at all, right?
No, we sat right at the counter. I think if we had insisted upon a table, we probably would have had a 10 or 15 minute wait. But I think all of the people in Montreal were riding bicycles at that moment, so we were totally lucky.
That's right. That's right. Everybody was bicycling. We were stuffing our faces. So so smoked meat is somewhere between pastrami and corned beef. Would you agree? It's in the middle of that.
That's the perfect way of saying it, because we had just had the best pastrami in the world at Cass's Deli in New York City. Mm-hmm. And I knew this was going to be different, and I had kind of expected it to taste more like pastrami, but it was that perfect mesh of pastrami and corned beef. And I, for one, I loved what we did. Tell them about the what we ordered.
What did we order? Did we just order a plate of meat and bread? Is that what we did?
We ordered a plate of meat and bread. And I think, the guy was super nice. We didn't, because it was cash only, and we didn't have enough cash for two pickles, but he gave us two pickles.
Right.
He was cute. I really liked him, the guy at the counter.
Yeah, so I will say, like, Canadians are super, super sweet. And you're right, the person handling us at the counter was incredible. And yes, bring your cash. Everything is delicious. But the plate with meat and just side of bread was enough for both of us. I think we didn't even finish everything, right?
No, we didn't come close. It was a lot of meat, but we gave it the old college try. We did good.
We did good. So you definitely guys got to try Schwartz's Deli. Now, I watch a lot of food Network and cooking channel. And if you know of Chef Chuck Hughes, he's the gorgeous Canadian chef of Montreal. So I made Lauren go to this restaurant, and it's primarily a seafood type of restaurant. What's fresh and local at the time. And it was really good. I had scallops. What did you have?
Oh my gosh. So I'm not a dinner person. And I was going to this place thinking, you know, I would just get an appetizer, which I ended up doing, but I didn't realize it was like mind-blowing appetizer. I got the Brussels sprouts, which had some Thai chilies in them and a little bit of like a balsamic drizzle, but best Brussels sprouts in the world. And I've had some really good Brussels sprouts in my life. And I'm not anti-spice, but I'm not used to a ton of spice. And if you know chai chilies, you know that I was crying through those Brussels sprouts, but I kept going back like for more. They were delicious.
I mean, I do love spice, and it was spicy. So I was surprised that you were like pounding on. So it must've been really, really good. And, so when I walked in there, I had hoped to see Chef Chuck Hughes, and you know, I was told that he wasn't in town, like he was in Toronto or something. And then I think 40 minutes later, he walks in. And then I think, is it the maitre d' or the host walked me to him? And I got to meet Chef Hughes, and I'm so excited. And he gave me food recommendations. Some of the food recommendations he gave me, we had already hit, like Schwartz's Deli, Jean Talon Market. So it was kind of cool to get validation that the food we chose for those 2 days was what Chef Chuck Hughes would have chosen if we were here for 2 days. So I thoroughly enjoyed the meal. Lauren, I know you don't do dinner, so thank you for going with me, but I loved my scallops. They were incredible.
Oh, the whole experience was amazing. I mean, we're walking in and Adrienne's a little bit more outgoing than I am with strangers. And she walked in and she's like, where's Chuck? Is Chuck here? Where's Chuck? Where's Chuck? And I was like, it's not going to happen, honey. These celebrity chefs are never here, but you know, go ahead and ask. And of course, when they said he wasn't there, I was just like, I was hoping that you wouldn't be too disappointed, but you weren't. You were cool. And then out of nowhere, like we kept seeing his brother, cause his brother is like his mini twin.
That's right.
Not mini. I mean, they're both like super tall, buff, gorgeous dudes, but anyways. And then, yeah, it was the host and he's like, by the way, guess who's outside in their car? Come on over. And the fact that he wrote us the list and spent so much time talking to you about things, because he's like, what are you here in Montreal for? And you're like, food, man. I'm here for the food. He was just one of the coolest guys ever. And that was a really neat experience. So I'm so glad we had that.
Yes. And then I think that was our last night there. And then while we were driving to Vermont, did we stop at IKEA on the way out? Because you don't have IKEA in Hawaii. I think that's what we did before we left, right?
That was one of the things we did on our last day, because we got up early the next morning to leave. Yeah. Gotcha, IKEA. Gotcha. That's somewhere we did not get food, but that's okay. We got lots of fun stuff because I had, like Adrienne had mentioned, just bought my place. But yeah, so next morning, after Adrienne made us like the best dinner ever, she slaved over it for hours and hours, and it was amazing. Favorite thing you did in Montreal, Adrienne?
Oh gosh, it's got to be dinner at Edgard Manger. And I think if I had went to Notre Dame, it would probably be right up there. But of course, we didn't get a chance to experience it. But I really enjoyed meeting Edith because you and I don't really know any other plus size travel bloggers or experts. So it was really cool to kind of hear her perspective on things. And then you were saying earlier about the body positive movement, and she taught us all about it, and we really didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, she is a force to be reckoned with in the industry. So, I mean, the fact that she met with us is just so amazing. I think if we had seen Aria, that would have been both of our favorite things that we had done at the Notre Dame, but we of course did not. That's okay. Next time. So then we headed back south. We were going to do a road trip from Montreal all the way back to JFK Airport, basically. So, the first thing I remember hitting up is what's it called where you buy the perfume in the makeup place?
Oh, the tax-free place, right?
Yes. I remember hitting up some tax-free, which was awesome. But Nothing really to be said about plus size issued in Montreal. Very accessible city. Everybody was on foot or on bikes, so just take it at your own pace. But let's talk Vermont for a little while.
Let's do. So I think I was driving, so I wasn't really paying attention, but you were kind of like, I mean, you were enjoying the scenery. Like, what was your thoughts as we were driving down?
As we were heading down, my first thought was, where can I buy a lottery ticket? Because, again, something not to be found in Hawaii. But, yeah, farms, beautiful greenery. This was May, so super gorgeous. Vermont was slightly different than I was expecting. It is, I was looking for bigger towns, which really, it took a long time driving in Vermont to find, like, a town. People just have their land and their farms, and there's not a whole lot to a downtown. But one of our first stops, of course, was heading down into the Stowe and Waterbury area, because that is one of the main areas in the whole state, because I researched the whole state, where there's a lot of things to do, a lot of touristy things. And, of course, there was the Von Trapp Lodge that I wanted to go to. Huge Sound of Music fan. But we did a lot of fun stuff, and some of them were rather foodie, like the...
we went to that cheese store. What was that called?
It was called the Annex, which was mainly the Cabot Cheesery, which was basically every kind of delicious cheese they make in Vermont, done the absolute best way it can be done. And they let you literally taste every single kind of cheese as often as you want. We restrained ourselves, but I bought myself at least two or three different kinds of cheese. And then you yourself, I think you got at least one or two, right?
I got one, and it was a spreadable cheese. And, just so you know, spreadable cheese are not allowed on carry-ons. It has to be a solid cheese. So before I checked into my flight, I had to scarf down as much spreadable cheese as possible. So word of note, if it's not solid, it's not going on standby. Or I'm sorry, it's not going in your handheld.
Oh, well, that's a huge bummer.
Well, good thing we went to Ben and Jerry's next.
The factory, yes. So for just, I mean, I think it was under $5, you can tour the Ben and Jerry's factory. And I think the tour was like 45 minutes. And it walks you through the history of Ben and Jerry's and their flavors that are discontinued. And you can actually look down into the production area. And at the very end of the tour, you get a sample ice cream of the day. Now, you can enjoy your free ice cream, but then there's also a scoop shop outside of the factory store. So if you, that one scoop wasn't enough, you can go ahead and like chow down on a few more. But overall, it was just a really cute tour for just a few bucks. And it's quirky. It's punny. You got to stop there. I think it's the number one thing to see in Vermont.
Oh, I think it's the highest rated attraction. Absolutely.
I think so.
And then you ended up not staying with me at the Von Trapp Lodge. You headed back to, what's the name of the town? Burlington.
Los Angeles. Yeah, I had to fly out of Burlington, Vermont. I had to come home a couple days early for a family thing. So I actually left Lauren F. Before she went to the Von Trapp Lodge, which was something I was really looking forward to. Lauren, why don't you tell them a little bit about Von Trapp Lodge? It's like legitimately tied to the Sound of Music.
Absolutely. The Von Trapp family came to America. They did a lot of competitive singing as well while they were here, but they set up shop in Vermont. I'm not sure how long it took them to become the actual lodge. The lodge has come a long way. I know they did some major renovations in the last 10 years because people I've talked to who have visited the Von Trapp Lodge in the way history early days were like not as impressed as I was. I was definitely in a new wing, and they're just set in these mountains, very Swiss, tall, gorgeous, dark mountains. They've got tons of like goats and cows and all sorts of different animals on their property. They do an amazing morning buffet breakfast. The halls are all filled with Von Trapp family memorabilia, photographs and paintings, same with inside of the rooms. I did note that there was very little Sound of Music-y. Like, I kind of had this feeling that I would get inside and, like, something would be, there'd be music sung by the Von Trapp family or something. But much to the happiness of the hotel staff, there was not. But it's just one of the cutest hotels I think I've ever stayed in. Just adorable. They have an indoor pool, which is my favorite thing to look for when I'm picking a hotel, is pools, pools, pools. Oh, yeah, we enjoyed that one really nice one in New York City. But anyways, definitely worth it. I saw the most amazing sunset, had a conversation with a couple of little lambs, and thoroughly enjoyed my stay there. And the next morning, I got up bright and early, headed down to enjoy their indoor pool for a swim, breakfast buffet, and got on the road. Now, there's several... there's hundreds of ways, of course, to drive through Vermont. And what I had done was chosen to do it through the byways. You can take major highways, which is probably where I would have seen bigger towns. But the more scenic way to do Vermont via vehicle is going to be going on their little byways, which are literally just, you know, two-lane roads, one in each direction, in the single most scenic possible ways. And that's what I did. I threw on some great music and to keep myself awake and excited, and just town after town, driving past lakes of shining waters. Vermont is truly, truly beautiful. Of course, the next major stop, which was going to have to be the Vermont Country Store, which did not disappoint. If you've ever in your life gone through a Vermont Country Store catalog, this is basically the catalog. It's everything you can imagine and more. I spent a good hour, didn't buy too much because I didn't have any more room in my luggage after, you know, splurging on cheese. But I had lunch there. That was absolutely lovely, and headed back onto the roads. And eventually, I got all the way through amazingly beautiful Vermont, but then you have to go back through, like, upstate New York, which was something that we had done on the way up. And then, of course, you're going to start hitting traffic going into the city. So I sat in a lot of bumper-to-bumper traffic, got myself to Jamaica, New York, stayed in a cute little hotel right by the airport, and Bob's your uncle. It was the perfect road trip, listening to the Sound of Music soundtrack, listening to all sorts of fun music. My brother sent me some Frank Zappa, and I just think what you need to do is, what I did, is reach out to the Vermont Guest Visitors Bureau and have them send you the byways maps and just maps in general of Vermont, and decide on your own. Like, do you want to go slow through the itsy-bitsy towns like I did? Do you want to see bigger cities? But I think for the most part, and I know this is not going to sound really great, but you can't go wrong with all the little towns. There's something similar within all of them. You know, I know this is a weird fun fact, but if you drink Green Mountain coffee, or if you buy Green Mountain coffee pods, which I'm pretty sure every single Keurig pod these days is probably something to do with Green Mountain. That's in the same area of Stowe, Green Mountain, which is what the nickname of Vermont is, Green Mountain. So anyways.
Thank you for the fun fact, Lauren. And I think that ends our adventure to Montreal and our drive down to Vermont. So thank you for listening. You can find the Plus Size Traveler podcast on Instagram, and we have a new Facebook page, which I haven't really populated with much stuff, but I will. So do like that. And if you are looking to get more information on me, you can find me on Instagram at Traveling Adrian. I also started a blog with only two things because I really don't have a lot of time to write, but maybe I'll write a couple things, also on Traveling Adrian.
And you can find me, Lauren, at theplussizeglobetrotter.com, as well as on Instagram as theplussizeglobetrotter. And just keep in mind, every episode we're going to be switching between international and domestic locations. Although Montreal is in Canada, we're going to consider it domestic since it's still in North America and we drove there. And our rules. And we'd love to invite you to join us for the next episode, where we're going to talk about Bavarian Germany and the Christkindl markets. I can never say it correctly. But basically, the Christmas markets in Germany. And we hope that you're getting out there and exploring as plus-size travelers. And I would just like to bid you a mahalo, and thanks for listening.
Thank you so much. Mahalo.